ओम गणितमनंदस्य अर्चनाचनाशलकया चक्षुस्मृतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थपितं जनगुप्तले स्वयं प्रतिदमयं ददति सर्वपरीक्षितम् वंशकौपितृभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च प्रीतिनां भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः Narada Muni have appeared in disguise before Chittaketu Maharaj, who was lamenting over the death of his young son. It's hard to even imagine when the man Chittaketu, his heart has been completely broken. And his child is right there. And what do we expect the sage, the holy person, to do at that time? We expect him to give some type of consolation, somehow soothe the grieving heart. The last thing, practically speaking, we expect the sage to do is to cut the attachment of the father to the son with transcendental knowledge, preaching so boldly, straight, uncompromisingly, saying that the relationship you have with this boy, had with this boy, is just temporary. Your relationship was with his body. And the soul passes into so many bodies and adopts so many temporary relationships. And these things are out of your control anyway. They're in the hands of higher powers. And there you are, lamenting in ignorance. So who would expect him to preach in that way? So straightforwardly. So what allows him to do that is his own spiritual potency. Because one can mimic the words and not have any depth of realization, and those words spoken in a mimicking way with no realization cannot touch the heart of the person one's speaking to. So on one side, that which allowed him to speak in that way was his own spiritual potency, incredible spiritual potency, that could just immediately touch the heart, immediately. And on the other side, Chittaketu Maharaj was a great devotee. He was very receptive inherently. He was already very realized, but somehow or another it was hidden below the surface. So therefore the combination of the potent preacher and the pure-hearted, receptive audience immediately, like flint hitting flint, there was sparks of spiritual knowledge, there was illumination, there was enlightenment, practically speaking. Immediately he realized, Chittaketu realized that this is truth. Immediately his lamentation disappeared. And instantaneously he wanted more. He wanted to hear more. He didn't want to be left alone with his misery. He wanted to hear more. Then, having been requested to speak more, then Angira Muni revealed himself. He took away his disguise and said, I could have given you transcendental knowledge before when I first met you, but instead, because you wanted a son, I gave you that. Because when one's heart is full of material desires, What can one hear spiritually? So therefore, no one wants suffering. It is built into the very nature of the material world. Suffering is built in. It is inherently the characteristic of the material world. And that is Krishna's mercy. Because when suffering comes along, when the distress comes along, then after we somehow have worked hard to get an object or something that we thought would have made us happy, and then it frustrates us, either immediately or in time, then when the distress is in the heart, then we are more able to renounce that desire and hear something higher. So Angira Muni told that to Chitraketu. I could have told you this immediately. But you were not at all ready to hear. Did not want to hear. You wanted something else so in such a determined fashion. And just like if there's some grass or wood, and if it is very wet, if it's been immersed in water, the fire can't do anything. So when we're full of the water of material desires and we really want something in the material level, Matirna Krishna, Paratakshvatova, Mityovi, Patyati, Grihavratanam, if we have that vow, that determination to enjoy material life, Matirna Krishna, the inclination to love Krishna, to love God, to know the truth, can never ignite within our hearts, no more than wood can ignite, even in the presence of fire, if it is soaking wet. Unless the fire is burning so strongly, it dries out the wood first. So that's what the association of devotees does, because, speaking for myself, so many material desires in my heart, so many plans to enjoy myself in one way or another. Nothing is done with a pure desire to serve Krishna. So therefore the association of devotees is required. And at the same time, the material world just naturally crushes all those plans. If nothing else, by old age, by disease. So now, Narada Muni, being right before the king, wants to show him something very graphically. Maybe could you open the window? Okay, doors are fine. So Narada Muni said, Sukadeva Goswami was narrating this pastime, said, "My dear King Prickett," he's telling a king who's about to die. This is halfway through the Bhagavatam. Well, it's probably a third, a little more than a third. So a little less than half, because the tenth canto is so long. Somewhere between, say, between a third and a half of the Bhagavatam. So half his time has already gone almost. He had a week to live, so he's on the third day. He's going to die quite soon, 4 days later. So Maharaj Prickett is speaking so strong, is hearing the words of Sukadeva Goswami so strongly, because he needs this. He's going to die in 4 days. He knows it. So he's preparing himself, filling himself with transcendental knowledge. So Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King Prickett, by his mystic power, the great sage Narada brought the dead son into the vision of all the lamenting relatives and then spoke as follows." So Narada Muni then is going to do something very wonderful by his powers. He said, Narada Muni said, "O living entity," he started addressing the soul that had departed, the soul of the dead boy. "All good fortune to you. Just see your father and mother. All your friends and relatives are overwhelmed with grief because of your passing away. Because you died untimely, the balance of your lifetime still remains. Therefore, you may re-enter your body and enjoy the remainder of your life, surrounded by your friends and relatives. Accept the royal throne and all the opulences given by your father. It's interesting to note that the wife of Chitraketu, Kritaduti, when the boy had just died, she was crying and crying and crying and addressing the child with an impossible request, "You please come back, you please come back." And of course, one can't bring the soul back into the body. But yet Narada Muni, by his power, is doing it. "Come back," he says to the soul. "Come back. Your parents are crying, lamenting. Enjoy the kingdom. You will inherit it. Come back." By the mystic power of Narada Muni, the living entity re-entered his dead body for a short time and spoke in reply to Narada Muni's request. He said, "According to the results of my fruitive activities, I, the living being, transmigrate from one body to another, sometimes going to the species of the demigods, sometimes to the species of lower animals, sometimes amongst the vegetables, and sometimes to the human species. Therefore, in which birth were these my mother and father?" Narada was saying that your mother and father are lamenting. He's saying, in which birth these? I've had so many mothers and fathers. I've had countless mothers and fathers. I've had bird mothers and fathers. And you see that, the birds, they want, if the offspring are there in the nest, the little baby birds, the mother bird will shall swoop down and protect. The cat will protect. The lion will protect. The dog, when the mother dog has given birth to puppies, she won't let anyone get near, practically speaking. She'll bite them immediately. So which one, he says, which ones, in which birth were these my mother and father? No one is actually my mother and father. How can I accept these two people as my parents? Very stark. We'll speak a little later about the starkness of it. And the honey within the starkness. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read half of it, or the second paragraph. This time the living entity was supposed to have been, the son of Maharaj Chitraketu and Queen Kritaduti, because according to the laws of nature, he had entered a body made by the king and queen. Actually, however, he was not their son. The living entity is the son of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because he wants to enjoy this material world, the Supreme Lord gives him a chance to enter various bodies. The living entity has no true relationship with the material body he gets from his material father and mother. He is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, but he is allowed to go through different bodies. The body created by the so-called father and mother actually has nothing to do with its so-called creators. Therefore, the living entity flatly denied that Maharaj Chitraketu and his wife were his father and mother, because the soul is eternal. So where is the question of father and mother in this material world? So how does the living entity, looking at it from this very stark philosophical side, how does he relate to others? Mother, father, friends. Text 5, the living entity just brought back into the body spoke again. In this material world, which advances like a river that carries away the living entity, What is the nature of that river? That is the force of time. It carries us, just like the river carries the wood. Automatically, the wood doesn't have to desire even to be carried. It just gets carried automatically. So similarly, time carries us, the living entity. Within the bodies, we get carried away. And what is the result of that carrying? Like a river that carries away the living entities, all people become friends, relatives, and enemies in due course of time. So someone, by the force of time, the soul gets put into one situation, and then certain people appear to be your friends. And as the river of time moves on, carrying the soul, then some of those same people may turn to be the enemies. And then the river moves on and you forget about them and you have new friends and new enemies and the river of time keeps moving. They act neutrally. They mediate. They despise one another. They act in many other relationships. Nonetheless, despite these various transactions, no one is permanently related, either as friend, as child, as enemy, family member. It's not a permanent relationship. So the child is speaking like this. Purport by Prabhupada. It is our practical experience in this material world that the same person who is one's friend today becomes one's enemy tomorrow. This is politics. It happens in politics. It happens just in our lives also. Someone's allies and then you're fighting with your allies later on. Some friend becomes an enemy. The one who gives you the most pleasure causes the greatest pain to you. This is just the nature of a material reality and the force of time. Our relationships as friends or enemies, family men or outsiders, are actually the results of our different dealings. Sutraketu Maharaj was lamenting for his son who is now dead. So the one who had given him so much pleasure now is giving him the most pain. But he could have considered the situation otherwise. This living entity, he could have thought, was my enemy in my last life. And now, having appeared as my son, he is prematurely leaving just to give me pain and agony. Why should he not consider his dead son his former enemy and instead of lamenting be jubilant because of an enemy's death? So it depends, again, as we heard yesterday, on the mental consideration. It's not our pleasure and pain, our consideration of happiness and distress is all based on the mind, and how things are considered by the mind. It has nothing to do with objective reality. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 3:27, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Kamani Savasha, factually, everything is happening because of our association with the modes of material nature. Therefore, one who is my friend today in association with the mode of goodness may be my enemy tomorrow in association with the modes of passion and ignorance. As the modes of material nature work, in illusion, we accept others as friends, enemies, sons or fathers in terms of the reactions of different dealings under different conditions. So these things are all subjective and relative and always changing. We even experience, amazingly enough, that something that we want so desperately, imagining it's going to be pleasure, in 2 seconds it can change. And we can hate and despise that very same thing. The very same thing that we wanted, we can have aversion for in 1 minute, 10 seconds. This is the nature of the mind and its dealings in the material world. So no one is permanently related. In fact, no one is permanently related to everything in the material world on the material level. All the relationships are flickering. Stark reality. Another example. Just as gold and other commodities are continually transferred from one place to another in due course of purchase and sale, So the living entity, as a result of his fruit of activities, wanders throughout the entire universe, being injected into various bodies and different species of life by one kind of father after another. Gold is transferred from hand to hand. And if it's in the hand, if it's in my hand, it brings me so much happiness. But if it's in the hand of my enemy and he's going to use that to hurt me, that same gold or money causes me so much pain. Same thing. So the living entity in one situation is in one mood and views the world one way, and then he's transferred to another situation, another body, keeping moving, moving. Some of Prabhupada's purport. By the laws of nature, the living entity is forced to enter the semen of a father and be injected into the womb of the mother. He is not in control of selecting what kind of father he will accept. Prakriti kriyamanani. The laws of nature force him to go to different fathers and mothers, just like a consumer commodity that is purchased and sold. This is not very sentimental, is it? It's not. There are no sentiments attached to this. Very stark. Therefore, the so-called relationship of father and son is an arrangement of prakriti or nature. It has no meaning, and therefore it is called illusion. The same living entity sometimes takes shelter of an animal father and mother, and sometimes a human father and mother. Sometimes he accepts a father and mother amongst the birds, and sometimes he accepts a demigod father and mother. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore, says, Brahmanda Brahmante Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasare Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. Harassed life after life by the laws of nature, the living entity wanders throughout the entire universe in different planets and different species of life. Somehow or other, if he is fortunate enough, he comes in touch with a devotee who reforms his entire life. Reforming the entire life means changing how we view our life. And that view of changing of the mind with knowledge affects our activities. So the life is reformed, remade. Thus the living entity goes home, back to Godhead. Therefore it is said, Janame janame sabe pita mattapai Krishna guru nahi mile Vaja Krishna Hari A. In the transmigration of the soul through different bodies, everyone in every form of life, be it human, animal, tree, or demigod, gets a father and mother. This is not very difficult. The difficulty is to obtain a bona fide spiritual master and Krishna. Therefore, the duty of a human being is to capture the opportunity to come in touch with Krishna's representative, the bona fide spiritual master. Under the guidance of the spiritual master, the spiritual father, one can return home back to Godhead. The soul continues. A few living entities are born in the human species, and others are born in as animals. Although both are living entities, their relationships are impermanent. An animal may remain in the custody of a human being for some time, and then the same animal may be transferred to the possession of another human being. As soon as the animal goes away, the former proprietor no longer has a sense of ownership. There's a story that Prabhupada related how one man was very, very, very wealthy. Very wealthy, and had a big house and sons, and then he died. And then he took his next birth as a cobbler. And the cobbler, the young cobbler, went to the same house that he was the master of, looking for work. And the sons, his sons, and were grown up then, and they saw him, and they were doing something else, and something. They had to come to the door, and they took out their shoes, and they just beat him and drove him away. So in one life you're the boss of the house, and in the next life your own sons are beating you and driving you away. All the relationships are impermanent. An animal may be in the custody of a human being for some time, and then the same animal may be transferred to the possession of another human being. And then when it's in the other's possession, as soon as the animal goes away, the former proprietor no longer has a sense of ownership. As long as the animal is in his possession, he certainly has an affinity for it, but as soon as the animal is sold, the affinity is lost. All these relationships are just shifting. So Narada, or the child actually, is preaching to Chitraketu to break his grief, to show him that his grief is based on illusion. Some of Prabhupada's purport. The living entity is certainly eternal, but because he is covered by a temporary dress, the body, his eternity is not observed. Dehinosmin yata dehe komanam jovanam jara. The embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age. Thus the bodily dress is impermanent. The living entity, however, is permanent. As an animal is transferred from one owner to another, the living entity who was the son of Chitraketu lived as his son for some time. But as soon as he was transferred to another body, the affectionate relationship was broken. The boy was expressing this. Who is my father? Who is my mother? The relationship is finished. As stated in the example given in the previous verse, when one has a commodity in his hand, he considers it his. But as soon as it is transferred, it becomes someone else's commodity. Then one no longer has a relationship with it. He no longer has affection for it, nor does he lament for it. I remember one time, many, many years ago, it was in Melbourne in 1975 or 6 or something. I had bought a second-hand car, and it was parked. It was an old Volkswagen, and it was parked outside of, we were doing something, and it was parked outside. And amazingly enough, the owners, the original owners who had sold it 6 months before or so, walked by and they saw it. And they were so excited to see their car again. And they came over to me, somehow they found out it was mine, and they said, "It's yours." And they were so, "This used to be our car," and everything like that. And I felt very awkward that they were impinging upon my car with their feelings of ownership and proprietorship. They had that kind of sentiment like that. But now I was the soul driving that car. It had transferred souls, the same body but different soul. Had been the energy behind it was now I was the one turning the key. And I actually felt very uncomfortable that they were talking about my car as if it was their car. It was very, very peculiar. Because when something is, and actually, in fact, they had no relationship with it anymore, but there was a sentiment. So that sentiment was still there, but I didn't have that sentiment with it, and neither did the car, obviously. But if the car got smashed up, then their sentiment wouldn't have felt the pain like I would have felt the pain, because it was no longer theirs. So how we keep the sense of ownership over things and relationship. Ownership means relationship when they don't actually exist. Or we, in illusion, feel as if it's truly ours in the relationship, and not thinking that it's only temporarily ours. And we invest ourselves in it as if it was ours, and therefore we're setting ourselves up for pain. There's a story of how one man traveled very, very, very far. He was traveling and traveling, because he wanted to meet the sadhu, the holy man, and he went into the village, his house, And he walked in and he was amazed because practically speaking, there were no possessions in the house. There was nothing almost. The sadhu, the holy man, was just sitting. And immediately the man said, "This is amazing. How come you have so little?" So the sadhu, holy man, looked at him and said, "How come you have so little?" And he said, "Well, I'm just traveling and passing through." So the sadhu said, "So am I." But it's just a different... We don't like to think like this, but this is actually reality. We imagine. We invest all our self in things that are just fleeting. To the neglect of our real self, which is eternal, and the eternal relationships. And that's actually the key of having legitimate relationships within a fleeting, temporary, material world. But first, this part has to be cracked to some degree. And we are in, naturally, an awkward position. Because naturally, when one has a child, one has parents, and one has friends, naturally there's affection exchanged. Naturally. It's just natural. You can't avoid it. We could hear philosophy until our ears are full of it and it's coming out the other ear. And it still won't stop us from the natural affections that exist. So what to do? Unless we're fully realized, we're in that situation. So the art of living in the world is to transform those relationships into spiritual relationships. And as Narada Muni is doing, he's speaking to the soul. He's speaking to the eternal aspect. The eternal, the real person. And I had an interesting experience when I first started chanting. Not just first, but I was chanting, and there was the devotee who had preached to me. His name was Rupanuga, and I was living in the temple, and he had a son whose name was Eric, who was 5 years old, and one night we were sitting and talking, and Rupanuga was there, and Eric was there, and some of the other devotees were there. And I was talking with this young boy, Eric, who's now, that was 1968, and he was 5. So how old is he now?
37.
Yeah, so he was this little blonde boy at that time, just so little and blonde and cute. Now he's 37-year-old man. He's changed his body. But in any case, while I was talking to him, we were just saying something, and Rupanuga, somehow or another, he said that actually this boy is a soul. He didn't say it like that, as bluntly as that. And suddenly, the words struck me so deeply, and my whole sense of reality shifted, and I actually saw him as a soul. And it changed everything completely. It was for a few seconds only, but it was shocking. Because we're used to dealing with bodies and treating people as if they were the body. But then when you see the body after the soul has left the body, a quote, dead body, You see that there's no life in it. That which you loved, that you had a relationship with, wasn't the body at all. Because it's gone. You have some sentiment to the body because you remember that this happened, you did this together, and you did this together. So there's some sentiment, but clearly, obviously, that which is lovable, that which is relatable to, the life, the soul, is no longer there. It's no more lovable than a piece of wood. It's astounding if you've never seen a dead body. They may, in the funeral parlor, they may dress it up and do this and that, but it's no use really, because the life, the element that gives life, is not there. So how to relate on a spiritual level while we're living in a very material world, while we are not yet possibly even on that spiritual level, is tricky. But we should hear and think in this way. And by Krishna's grace, he can help us act in an appropriate way. So very stark talking, because this sentimental illusion really should be cracked for us to advance spiritually. It must be cracked to identify others as the body and ourselves as the body. It has to be cracked. Otherwise, when we're leaving this body, we'll think that we'll be terrified. And we won't be able to hold on to Krishna tightly. Everything we'll think is lost. But actually, we'll think we're lost. But actually, we're not lost. We're not the body. So this, of course, is easier to speak about than to deal with when it's happening. But yet, if we don't speak about it, and we don't hear about it, and we don't hear the words of Srimad Bhagavatam, then what hope do we have? If we don't chant properly, what hope do we have? We're just going to be so caught in the whirlpool of illusion. And this illusion is a deep whirlpool, a very powerful whirlpool. So the quote child continues. Even though the one living entity becomes connected with another because of relationships based on bodies that are perishable, the living entity is eternal. Actually, it is not the body that is born or lost. Actually, it is the body that is born or lost, not the living entity. One should not accept that the living entity takes birth or dies. The living being actually has no relationship with so-called fathers and mothers. As long as he appears as the son of a certain father and mother, as a result of his past fruit of activities, he has a connection with the body given by that father and mother. Thus he falsely accepts himself as their son and acts affectionately. After he dies, however, the relationship is finished. Under these circumstances, one should not be falsely involved with jubilation and lamentation. The living entity is eternal and imperishable. Esho nitya avyakta sukshma. Esha savasraya svadrik atmamaya guna vishvam atmanam srijate prabhu. The living entity is eternal and imperishable because he actually has no beginning and no end. He never takes birth or dies. He is the basic principle of all types of bodies. It is the soul that makes the body grow. It is the soul that makes the body grow. It is the life. Life comes from life. He is the basic principle of all types of bodies, yet he does not belong to the bodily category. The living being is so sublime that he is equal in quality to the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, because he is extremely small, he is prone to be illusioned by the external energy. And thus he creates various bodies for himself according to his different desires. So, in the verse here, read this. In this verse, the philosophy of achintya bheda bheda, simultaneous oneness and difference, is described. The living entity is eternal, nitya, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the difference is that the Supreme Lord is the greatest, no one being equal or greater than Him. Whereas the living entity is sukshma, or extremely small. The Shastra describes that the magnitude of the living entity is 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. The Supreme Lord is the all-pervading, andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. Relatively, if the living entity is accepted as the smallest, there should naturally be inquiry about the greatest. The greatest is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the smallest is the living entity. Another peculiar characteristic of the jiva, the soul, is that he becomes covered by maya, atma maya gunai. He is prone to be covered by the Supreme Lord's illusory energy. The living entity is responsible for his conditioned life in the material world, and therefore he is described as Prabhu, the Master. If he likes, he can come to this material world, and if he likes, he can return home back to Godhead. Because he wanted to enjoy the material world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave him a material body through the agency of the material energy. As the Lord says himself in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara Savabhutanam Riddhishe Arjuna Tishtati Brahmayan Savabhutani Yantra Vridhani Mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The Supreme Lord gives the living entity a chance to enjoy in this material world as he desires, but he openly expresses his own desire, the Lord's own desire, that the living entity give up material aspirations, fully surrender to him, and return home back to Godhead. Next verse. For this living entity, no one is dear. So it's the materially neutral in dealing with the material world. For this living entity, no one is dear, nor is anyone unfavorable. He makes no distinction between that which is his own and that which belongs to anyone else. He is one without a second. In other words, he is not affected by friends and enemies, well-wishers or mischief-mongers. He is only an observer, a witness of the different qualities of men. So in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there is a description of the living entity who is realized, who knows that he's a soul, but yet living in within a material body, and how he observes things. And it's like he has an aloofness, a neutrality, like a person in a car. Again, a car, a vehicle only. But his attachment and attraction is on the spiritual level to the Lord. Here is Prabhupada's purport. Although he's talking about, the verse talks about the living entity, Prabhupada's purport deals mostly with the qualitatively great Lord and the living entity being qualitatively the same as the Lord, but tiny. The Lord is great and the living entity is tiny, but qualitatively both are spiritual, eternal. Purport. As explained in the previous verse, the living entity has the same qualities as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he has them in minute quantity because he is the small particle, sukshma, whereas the Supreme Lord is all-pervading and great. For the Supreme Lord, there are no friends, enemies, or relatives. So for the verse talked about the neutrality of the living entity in the material world. So now the purport is going to speak of the Lord's neutrality, because they're qualitatively the same. For the Supreme Lord, there are no friends, enemies, or relatives, for he is completely free from all the disqualifications of ignorance that characterizes the conditioned souls. So this Supreme Lord, again, he's neutral. So is that the kind of Supreme Lord that anyone is interested in? Not very much. So another aspect of him, Prabhupada's going to explain. On the other hand, he's extremely kind and favorable to his devotees. And he is not at all satisfied with persons who are envious of his devotees. As the Lord himself confirms in the Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Savabhuteshu Name Dveshostina Priya Ye Bhajanti Tumam Bhaktya Maya Chateshu Chapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. The Supreme Lord has no enemy or friend, but he is inclined towards a devotee who always engages in his devotional service. Text 11. The Supreme Lord Atma, the creator of cause and effect, does not accept the happiness and distress that results from fruit of actions. He is completely independent of having to accept a material body. And because he has no material body, he is always neutral. The living entities, being part and parcel of the Lord, possess his qualities in a minute quantity. Therefore, one should not be affected by lamentation. So that's the last verse that the soul within the boy's body says. So the Lord is neutral and you are his part and parcel, and therefore you should be neutral in this regard as well. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada explains that the Lord is neutral but he's active. His neutrality is like a judge. This is one aspect of the Lord. Samoham Savabhuteshu is the super soul. But he deals with devotees, those who have a relationship with him, differently. Maharaj Chitraketu is advised that remaining neutral in such trying circumstance as the death of one's son is impossible. So here, Prabhupada in his purport is bringing it more to a practical level. That it is impossible to be neutral in this way. Nevertheless, since the Lord knows how to adjust everything, the best course is to depend upon him and do one's duty in devotional service to the Lord. In all circumstances, one should be undisturbed by duality, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Karmani eva dakaraste ma pale sukadachana ma karma phalo hito bur ma te sango stvakarmani. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. In other words, one should do one's duty and act not neutrally, but dutifully, with great devotion as service to Krishna. But yet the fruit, the results, are beyond our control. And one has to be neutral as to the results. But yet one should do one's duty with great devotion and great affection. One should execute one's devotional duty, and for the results of one's action, one should depend upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Heavy philosophy, very stark, very heavy. Just imagine King Chitraketu. The son died, he's crying and crying and crying and crying. There's no life in the son's body. And by the power of Narada Muni, the soul again enters. What relief in the father's heart, the mother wiped her tears away. And what does the child say? Who is my father and mother here? I've had so many fathers and mothers. Practically, they were forced to accept the eternality of the soul and the temporariness, the ephemeralness of the shiftingness of the material relationships. So Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the conditioned soul in the form of Maharaj Chitraketu's son had spoken in this way, then he left again. The soul left the body again. So what could Chitraketu and his wife do at that time? The soul didn't want to stay. And yet they knew that that which was lovable was not the body, because the body had remained, and that which is lovable had gone somewhere else. He didn't die. The lovable element, the soul, had not died. But what had died was their lamentation and their illusion. So when Chitraketu Maharaj's son had spoken in this way and left, Chitraketu and the other relatives of the dead son were all astonished. Thus they cut off the shackles of their affection, which was due to their relationship with him, and gave up their lamentation. After the relatives had discharged their duties by performing the proper funeral ceremonies and burning the dead child's body, they gave up their affection, the affection that leads to illusion, lamentation, fear, and pain. Such affection is undoubtedly difficult to give up, but they gave it up very easily. It would probably take such a dramatic occurrence for us to be so realized as well. Queen Kritaduti's co-wives, who had poisoned the child, were very much ashamed, and they lost all their bodily luster. While lamenting, O king, they remembered the instructions of Angira and gave up their ambitions to bear children. Following the directions of the brahmanas, they went to the bank of the Jamuna, where they bathed and atoned for their sinful activities. Prabhupada, in his purport, speaks about in Kali Yuga, there is abortions. And he says, any woman who has ever performed such an act must atone for it, but no one now is doing that. Under the circumstances, the women responsible must suffer in this life and the next. Those who are sincere souls, after hearing this incident, should refrain from such child killing and should atone for their sinful activities by taking to Krishna consciousness very seriously. If one chants the Hare Krishna mantra without offenses, all of one's sinful actions are surely atoned for immediately, but one should not commit such deeds again, for that is an offense. The last several verses with no purports. Thus enlightened by the instructions of the brahmanas, Angira and Narada, Chitraketu became fully aware of spiritual knowledge. As an elephant becomes free from a muddy reservoir of water, King Chitraketu came out of the dark well of family life. The king bathed in the water of the Jamuna, and according to prescribed duties, he offered oblations of water to the forefathers and demigods. Very gravely controlling his senses and mind, he then offered his respects and obeisances to the sons of Lord Brahma, Angira and Narada. Thereafter, being very much pleased with Chitraketu, who was a self-controlled devotee and surrendered soul, Narada, the most powerful sage, spoke to him the following transcendental instructions. So now there's going to be instructions about the spiritual, the different levels of spiritual understanding. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Very, very difficult, very, very heavy, powerful instructions. They put us in touch with a reality that we don't wish to be in touch with. Why? Because it shatters the illusions that we are very attached to. So better, it seems, to take the medicine now while we are able to, and become more serious in our Krishna consciousness, in our development of our spiritual life, than be averse to these illusion-shattering instructions and therefore have to suffer later on. So difficult to give these kind of classes because one finds that one has to speak about things and criticize things that one is guilty of oneself. So the better parts of giving class is that one has to hear it. One has to hear what one's speaking. And it pushes one, tends to push one towards trying to act on a higher level as well. So therefore, preaching is always recommended for everyone. Preaching is recommended, sharing one's realizations, hearing the Bhagavatam and speaking on the Bhagavatam, hearing the Bhagavad Gita and speaking on the Bhagavad Gita is recommended because, again, it forces one, if for no other reason, it forces one to hear carefully what one is speaking. Okay, thank you very much. Again, in every philosophical classes, we've run out of time, so there's no time for questions. But tomorrow, let's see how we do. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Chitta Ketu Maharaj. Narada Muni Angira Muni ki jai.